The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our show today. In a few minutes, I'll be interviewing Glennon Doyle Melton, author of the hilarious and deeply moving book called Carry On, Warrior, Thoughts on Life Unarmed. Glennon is a deeply committed person to living honestly and speaking openly about her and our journey of living. She began by writing a blog that went viral. The book came next, and with her fame, she's doing something that makes all of us proud here at Bread for the Journey. She's rallied all of her followers to donate money, no more than $25 each. That's the rule, and giving it away to people in need. We'll talk with her in a minute, but first I'd like to tell you about a grant our chapter in Austin, Texas, just gave. It's to an organization called Grief to Peace Project. Mary Lepore and Charmel Teresi. Aren't those beautiful names? Mary Lepore and Charmel Teresi created a series of 12 short videos that covered the many facets of grief and was designed to help people suffering loss to honor that loss and to also know that there was something worth living for at the other end of it. Now they're turning their attention to veterans of war, helping them navigate life here in the States after all they've been through. We gave Mary and Charmel a grant to cover part of the cost of studio time, crew expenses, and editing equipment to create and produce the Veteran Healing Project videos that can help veterans in Austin, Texas, and throughout the nation. And so, as you know, we've got 26 chapters in cities all around the country doing work like this. These are volunteers in these cities who, you know, create a small board of directors. We give them nonprofit status with the IRS. We give them a website. We give them guidance on how to give money away with using their intuitive senses as their due diligence and giving away small grants, trusting people in the community to do good work. And it's a beautiful, incredibly beautiful thing to see this grow in cities all around the nation. I am here at the central office as its executive director. We only have me and one part-time paid staff person and a few contract people who help us with our website and graphic design and things like that. We're struggling a bit financially right now. If you find a place in your heart to make a year-end contribution to help us stay afloat, now would be the time, and we would be so incredibly grateful. Thank you. If you'd like to do that, go to breadforthejourney.org and hit the donate button. And now I'd like to introduce you to our guest. Glennon Doyle Melton is the author, as I said, of the New York Times best-selling memoir, Carry On, Warrior, Thoughts on Life Unarmed. She's the founder of MamaStary.com, an online community where more than 100,000 readers meet daily to read Glennon's shameless and hilarious essays about motherhood, marriage, faith, addiction, recovery, community, and connection. Glennon is also the creator and president of the nonprofit organization Monkey See, Monkey Do, which has connected countless families in need with hundreds of thousands of dollars in critical resources. She's been featured on the Today Show, NPR, The Talk, Ladies Home Journal, Woman's Day, Glamour, Family Circle, and Parents Magazine, among other television and print outlets. Welcome to our show, Glenn, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. And before we begin, I want to give a shout out to a man named Al Rubel, who turned me on to Glennon. He is a donor, a longtime donor to Bread for the Journey. And every time he sends a donation, he always writes a small personal note with his donation. And every time I send a thank you, I send a small personal note back. So we've never met, but over the years, we've developed this sweet relationship. And one day he sent me a note and he said, I've got this friend who has just written a book I think you'd really love and told me about Carry On Warrior. So I immediately went and purchased the book, and I have been thanking Al ever since. I love this book from cover to cover. It has, you know, for those of us who have been doing transformational work for many years, you know, we've come to, you know, over time you get to the place where you really understand that hardship is part of the deal, that that's actually, that there's a gift in it that actually opens you up to a more open-hearted living. And
yes,
it really does. But, you know, over the years, you know, the hardship sometimes makes life kind of too serious. And your book just had me laughing and laughing all the way through. You have this beautiful way of juxtaposing the hardship with humor. And in fact, I was at a workshop recently and someone said, if you had to limit for yourself to four values, what would they be? And I took a couple of days to think about it. And you know, for me, generosity is really key, and deep listening is another one that's really key. But the two that arose to the surface, and I would have to say as a result of reading your book, were humor and courage.
Oh, I love that. I love all four of yours. Amazing.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, life really is, it's so hard that it's absurd, right? So you have to laugh at the absurdity of it,
it's,
or we'll
really
lose it.
It's really true. So you were a gal with a pretty wild past, and
yes, ma'am.
You got pregnant and decided to turn your life around. How about if you tell our audience a little bit about that moment when you made the decision?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so it was Mother's Day 12 years ago now, and I found myself sitting on a tile floor, a bathroom floor, holding a positive pregnancy test, which was an extremely traumatic experience for me because I was just a raging alcoholic and had been a food addict. I'd been an alcoholic for 10 years and a food addict for 15, and just was really a mess. I was having a hard time. And, you know, everyone in my life had tried to help me, and I just couldn't accept it. And so that moment on the floor, I just thought, huh, there's somebody out there who found me worthy of this invitation, and maybe I should take them up on it. And so I promised myself I would just do the next right thing because I had no idea how to live as a sober adult. And I just figured out that doing the next right thing over and over again turned into a life. Mm-hmm. And so now I have a life. It's amazing to me every day. I mean, people who start off with an easier beginning don't understand how people like me wake up every day just freaking out from gratitude and joy, just that I'm vertical. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
well, that advice about the next right thing is really profound, actually. It sounds like a very lighthearted thing, but it's not.
Mm-mm, because it's too overwhelming. I mean, I remember, because I went to my first AA meeting and they said one day at a time, and that was totally overwhelming to me.
I mean,
one day at a time was too much. I needed one moment at a time.
Yeah. And we need a lot of support systems around us, you know, to help us, you know, in moments of weakness or when we actually don't even know what the next right thing is. And you've got a beautiful support system. Do you want to say a few things about that? Tell us who they are.
I do. Well, Mr. Rubel, Al Rubel, who told you about Mama's Dairy, is my dad's best friend.
Uh-huh.
And we call my dad Bubba. And my sister is, I have one younger sister who is my best friend. And she's actually the one who I called when I was finally ready to get some help for my alcoholism. And she's the one who walked me into my first AA meeting. And she walks me through every day still. Mm-hmm. And now I have this community of women who I meet with every single day online. And from them, I've learned that, you know, the details about all of us are different. You know, we have different family situations and finances and backgrounds and all of that. And that can make us feel really lonely. But what I've learned about Momstery is that the stuff that's 12 layers deeper than that, which is, you know, our feelings of loss and triumph and grief and joy, those are all exactly the same.
Mm.
And so at Momstery, that's what we do. We just, it takes this huge leap of faith, right, to jump from the surface stuff to the deeply personal stuff. But then when we do that, we get this amazing surprise, which is that the deeper personal stuff is actually the safer stuff. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's the same. That's, you know, that's why they say the most personal is the most universal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have this feeling now every day of just, I just feel safe. I feel safe on this earth because even when I go out into the real world now, which is not often because I'm just a recluse, but when I do, I feel like I know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it takes that idea that we are all one to another level, kind of a deeper level.
I think so. I really do believe that. And I say now when I walk around, that's the gift of this, of writing the way I do online, because I get to read women's stories. That's what I do. Half of my day, every day I write, and the other half I read. So I read every single email that mm-hmm. I've ever received. And so I get to see the same things repeating over and over again in people's lives.
Mm.
The same struggles, the same triumphs. And so when I go out into the world, I get to see other women as just like little walking novels. You know, I do. That's how I see people. And I've told my husband, like, we've been out to dinner and I've looked around at tables of people and just said, I just feel like standing up and just clapping for all of us for making it through this life.
It's and, true.
You know, I just feel like everyone deserves a standing ovation all the time.
Really,
and so of course my husband's always like, please don't clap.
Because he just might, knowing
that's
you.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
In reading your book, you know, this piece, you know, when you were talking about your struggle to find a job, even a volunteer job, you know, your history always came up and it created these obstacles. And, you know, then you decided to start telling the truth to everyone. And, in, you know, as I read that, you know, it's so, in a sense, so counterintuitive, you know, here the truth was being revealed in these interviews. And it was stopping you from getting work or even
exactly.
volunteer work. But then you decided to tell the truth as a response to that. And I had to laugh so much because, you know, when women have this way of this kind of non-intuitive intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, and I think sometimes men really scratch their head and they go, what? Where are you going with this? But we know exactly where we're going. And this was really a perfect example of that. And so maybe you could tell us just a little bit about that process with, you know, the conversation with Tess and your decision to begin telling the truth.
Yes. So I will, as with my sobriety, I did that because I'd run out of other ideas. Okay. So I went to church. I took my family to church because I felt like that's what, you know, young families should do. Like they should go to church. And so we went and somebody sent me home with a Bible and I started reading about being shameless, about how we didn't have to be ashamed of our pasts and about this grace thing. Yes, this idea of grace. And I just thought, this is the best thing I've ever heard of, especially for a girl like me, you know. And so I decided that maybe I was worthy because of that. I decided maybe I was worthy of kind of giving myself to the world. And so I tried to volunteer at all these places, but they kept doing background checks, which was a dilemma for me, okay? because you can only imagine. So I kept getting rejected, and it was so deflating. I mean, they wouldn't even let me work at the retirement home. They wouldn't even let me serve lemonade. Okay. Craig said maybe they thought I was going to spike the lemonade. I don't know. But I decided one day, oh, I know, my minister asked me to tell my story at church. And now here's the thing, Mariana. When he asked me to tell my story at church, he meant to just talk about my postpartum depression, but I didn't know that. When he said your story, I assumed he meant the whole thing. So I stood up on stage and told my whole story, and I wish you could – his eyes just saucers because he thought this was just going to be a sweet little baby story. No.
Right.
Okay. But because I got to tell the story of my – you know, my real – the real trouble I had in my life and how I felt alone a lot of my life and my recovery and the one right thing at a time. All these people after church came up to talk to me and just started telling me their stories. People who I had known for a long time, but who I had never really known.
Because you were suddenly a safe person and they had a story to tell that was, you know, in some way similar.
Yeah. And because it was like all of a sudden people were thinking, oh, we're going there. We're going to tell the truth. Because a lot of times we just walk around and we just act, right? Like, right. Because we think we're supposed to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so I went home that night and I thought, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could be a truth teller because I seriously have a gift for shamelessness now. I mean, I am like just so shameless that my dad actually called me one day after I had published, and he's my most supportive fan now, but he was very afraid at the beginning when I started publishing these stories online. And he called me one morning and said, Glennon, don't you just think there are some things you should take to the grave? And I just said, it was this moment of sort of truth for me because, you know, usually I believe what my parents tell me is true. You know, that's how I trust them. But it was this moment where I thought, no, I don't believe there's anything I have to take to the grave. That sounds awful. I just want to travel light. And I'm not ashamed of any of it anymore.
That's
and it was incredible. Yeah. And so I just started writing every morning.
You know, we've got to take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to begin. You've just opened that little piece. So I began writing every morning. So we're going to talk a little bit about one of the chapters in the book called Brave as a Decision. It was a letter that you wrote to your son on his first day of third grade. One of the things that you've written that has really touched me deeply, and I think obviously thousands of women, and men as well, I'm sure. So please stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Hi, I'm Ed Krell, CEO of Destination Maternity. We proudly support the March of Dimes work to reduce the rate of premature birth. The numbers have gone down in the past 5 years, but still, nearly 500,000 babies are born too soon in the United States each year. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and community programs to help more moms have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us in working together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit marchofdimes.com.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with Glennon Doyle Melton talking about her book, Carry On Warrior, Thoughts of Life Unarmed. And I really highly recommend that you purchase this book if you haven't already noticed in the interview. I'm a big fan. So when I read this chapter, Brave is a Decision, this essay that you wrote to your son on his first day of third grade, I must have called half a dozen people and read them this chapter. I was so touched and moved by it. And I thought it was brilliant the way you kind of, I mean, I'm a writer, so I'm not just reading content, I'm reading how something is delivered. And I thought it was sort of brilliant the way you started by talking about your own childhood and this classmate, Adam, who was a kid who needed a friend, mm-hmm. and how you wish that you had, today it was one of the sort of the regrets of your life, that you hadn't reached out as another kid, you know, having lunch with him or just showing him in one way or another that you were, you know, that you had his back. And so... You know, telling a story like that as you open the chapter or as you open the letter to your son, sort of really non-threatening. You know, he's hearing this story about his mom and her childhood. And from there, you were able to talk to him about when he sees a kid like this in the classroom. Do you want to talk a little bit about this chapter?
Yeah. So, yeah, Adam was a kid in my third grade class that I'll never forget. He just was lonely and nobody spoke to him. And of course, you know, Adam was inside of all of us, right? We all were afraid of being left out and afraid of being teased. So none of us would reach out to him because we didn't want to be categorized with him because we were, you know, too young to know better, I guess.
Right.
But then, you know, I was a third grade teacher. I was a teacher before I became a writer. And I just, you know, I wrote that letter because I think what is true for adults is, of course, also true for kids. And I'm a recovering everything. I have been through a lot in my life and made a lot of bad choices, but I don't have any regrets except for the times that I've been unkind to other people. Because when you've been through a lot of pain, the gift in that is that you have such a tenderness for anyone else that's in pain. Mm-hmm. That's why I wouldn't trade any of it. And I just want my kids to know that a little bit earlier than I did. And so I do write letters to my children about kindness and about how the other people in their lives are gifts, and that, you know, we tell our kids all the time, we don't care. We don't care if they get straight A's. We don't send them to school to be the best at anything. We just send them to school to practice being brave and kind. And, you know, we tell them to be brave because they are children of God, and to be kind because so is everyone else. And so those two sides of that coin are just equally precious and important. And I really think the only things that matter.
Mm. You know, you talked about the way that you sort of and, you know, brought the word compassion into it by saying, you know, when we see kids like this, you know, it breaks our heart a little bit. And that heartache is God's signal to you to do something. That heartache is called compassion. And I've read whole books on compassion and, of course, you know, been working with it my whole life. But I had never thought about it in that way.
You know, Marianna, I'm so glad you mentioned that because, you know, I'm entering this time of before Advent where I'm just trying to be still, you know, and I'm learning so much from Eastern religions about paying closer attention to our body, because it's so funny, right? I've read a million books about compassion too, but actually we already know it. We know it in our bodies. It's that tightening of our heart when we feel, you know, when we think of something, someone we've been unkind to, or we see someone that's hurting and we just feel it. We can feel it in our body. just a discomfort, right? And I think that discomfort is purposeful. That discomfort is a signal to us to do something, just something, anything. And I still, do you know, last night I was thinking about this interview and I thought about Adam, which I do daily for some reason. And still, it hasn't lessened. I get that feeling in my heart, that tightening every single time I think about Adam. And I still do something. I just breathe. I try to breathe in, you know, pain and out love for Adam. And I still feel like I'm doing something each day.
You know, that's a very advanced Buddhist practice called Tonglen.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've learned it from Pima. She's my, she saves me daily.
She's mine too. I mean, she is
I am
my
not
teacher.
Surprised.
She is
I am
my
not
teacher.
Surprised about
well,
that.
She's so approachable, isn't she? She's funny also. And she just has a way of speaking right to the point in as few words. And not that she's not articulate. She just gets right to the point very quickly.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, somebody recently asked me, as a Christian writer, what book would you say everyone needs to read? And I said, When Things Fall Apart.
Yeah.
And they said, by the Buddhist monk? I said, yes. Just yes.
It's so true. I was living on a boat at the time. And, you know, Pema likes to say, there's no ground beneath our feet. You know, I mean, she's trying to get us accustomed to the idea that, you know, any kind of security that we really think we have, you know, lighten up on that idea, because things could change in a moment and we see it all the time. And the way she says it is in some ways very direct. There is no ground beneath your feet. It's sort of scary when you think about it. But I was living on a boat and the boat would be rocking and I'd be standing there reading that book and actually kind of working to make the boat rock a little bit more to really drive home that idea that impermanence is part of this world we live in. It's just how it is.
Yes, that's right. It really makes you stop holding your breath.
That's right.
It makes everything better.
That's right. So back to this chapter that you wrote about compassion, you know, from there what you did was you took it to bravery. Mm-hmm. And I mean, of course it makes sense, you know, when you feel your heart tighten, and you see something, whether it's a homeless person on the street or a kid that's being bullied or even, you know, compassion for yourself in a difficult situation that you've just, you know, maybe had with somebody, a stranger or someone you love. There's this place where we can touch into that compassion and acknowledge it, breathe deeply, send that person, send ourselves love. And then in the book, you take it right to this next step. Do something that will make the situation better. And this is what bravery is.
Yeah. You know, my kids, it's so funny. I teach Sunday school and I talk to them about courage all the time, about being brave. And of course, they will always say at first, brave is when you're not afraid, which then we talk at length about how that's not it at all.
Right.
That all brave people are afraid. We are all afraid. But the kind of bravery that matters most is when you decide that the well-being of any of God's children, which includes yourself, is more important than your fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I tell my kids. I mean, there's lots of different kinds of courage, but the kind that stands up for love is the kind that matters the most to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me get to the point, you know, just reading chapter after chapter after chapter in your book, where that, the phrase that you say is, we can do hard things. Mm-hmm. And I think that you said that you have a sign up in your house, and so your kids are seeing that from, you know, every day, we can do hard things.
Yeah.
That's what part of what got drilled into me by the end of the book. Not that I haven't done hard things, because I have in my life, but to have a kind of mindset or a worldview that really says that, so that you can, in the way that you're connected to all these women, know that the whole world is behind you. And actually being vulnerable with the people that are in your support team, really letting them know that you're about to do something that is brave, or letting them know that you've just done something that's brave, or letting them know how afraid you are and be pretty real about it. Let your tears sort of flow. A lot of that came, I mean, of course, I've done a lot of work in my life, but so much of it came, it was just sort of driven home because you speak about it so directly and humorously and poignantly through your book.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, yes, the "we can do hard things," that sentence is probably the phrase that resonates the most with my readers. And I think the important thing that I keep reminding all of us and that other people remind me is that life is hard because it's supposed to be. It's not hard because you're doing anything wrong or because, you know, you're one book or one state or one house away from everything being easy. It's just because it's designed that way. And you could be doing everything right and life could still be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what we can do with that hard is we can let it kind of drive us towards each other to, you know, be honest and get help from each other. That's what we do with it at Momastery, with the hard. And, you know, lots of things worth doing. Well, you know what? I think relationships, which are really, you know, the only things that matter much about life, are also the messiest, hardest things.
They are.
There's no cleaning them up. They are messy and they're supposed to be. And so I guess what we're trying to do is just stop holding our breath and waiting for them to get less messy and just trying to find some beauty in the mess.
Mm-hmm. That's really where I think forgiveness comes in a really big way. And for me anyway, forgiving myself as a key person in that whole equation around learning forgiveness is the ground of being for being able to forgive everyone else. When I touch into my own tenderness, I'm more easily tender with other people. Isn't that true? Yeah.
It's so true. I was thinking about that the other day, of course, in Sunday school. It's my favorite place to be. And I was teaching the kids that, you know, God calls us beloved, right? We're beloved. And the people who really feel beloved are the ones who can be love to other people. And mm-hmm. the people who forgive themselves and don't carry shame are always the kindest, best people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whenever I get, you know, I am very, very honest about my past and my present and the mistakes I still make. And, you know, there is always some pushback from people who are upset that that I discuss the things I discuss because they think I should be ashamed. And I that used to upset me, but now I just wish for them that they would forgive themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where it comes from, I think.
Yeah, the people that I have met in the world who are the hardest on me, and not, you know, mentors in a good way telling me the truth that I need to hear. I'm really talking about people that try to shame me for something. Mm-hmm. What I really notice and see about them is that they're really hard on themselves.
Yeah.
And I really try to send them as much tender love as I can and best wishes that they learn to be less hard on themselves, that they let themselves off the hook.
Off the hook, absolutely. And right. You can love people from a distance.
Right. Yeah.
I have learned that too.
Yeah.
We can love people and still not have them in our everyday lives if they're bringing that shame back up. Absolutely.
Yeah. Hugh Prather was a friend of mine and was an author, a famous sort of author in the 70s. Notes to Myself was his really big book. And he lived in my town in Tucson when I lived there. And so I used to meet with him. And one of the things he said to me once about that was, the farther away that we are from someone physically, and that means somebody that you might be saying, you cannot be in my life, you cannot be in my sphere. The farther away that we are from them physically, the closer we want to be to them spiritually.
Mm. Oh my gosh, that's beautiful.
Isn't that powerful? I've always remembered that. So at the time, there was somebody that I was, you know, I couldn't have that person in my world. But, you know, each morning when I did my meditation, I just pretended they were sitting across the mat from me. And in that, in that really safe way, I could make a link between their heart and mine. And I believe that that really touches and changes us, you know, at a core level, and that it has some power in the healing of that relationship as well.
I love that. I am starting that tomorrow. That makes perfect sense.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And then when they call, I can say, listen, we already got together today. Okay?
Didn't you feel that?
Exactly. I don't have time for two appointments.
Oh, that's great. Well, this is a good time to take a break. We need to break one more time. And so to our listening audience, please stay with us. We'll continue this conversation. And in the third segment, we're going to talk a little bit about monkey see, monkey do, generosity and kindness in the world in a very tangible and practical way. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Now you can take your favorite Voice America radio program with you anywhere. Sign up for our mobile app if you have an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. The Voice America Interactive Radio Player, powered by Aircast, gives you the freedom to listen to any of our programs anywhere, live and on demand. No registration is required. Listen to your favorite Voice America hosts and discover new ones. Download the Voice America mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry, powered by Aircast. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Want to know what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network host? How about what's new with our network? Make sure you check out the iRadio blog, a look at what's hot at Voice America and beyond. Visit www.iradioblog.com today. Get the inside scoop on every channel on our network, including breaking news, featured guests, blog posts from our hosts, and much more. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter for even more inside action. Visit iradioblog.com today and stay connected.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet? Why not? Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for the keywords World Talk Radio. Once you're a part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the World Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for World Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with Glennon Doyle Melton, and in this segment, we're going to be talking about this incredible nonprofit she started called Monkey See, Monkey Do. Maybe you can start by telling us how you got that name.
Yeah, well, actually, my readers came up with that name because, well, okay, so my blog is called Momastery, which is a play on the word monastery, which I named it Momastery because when I started the blog, I was really just desperate for kind of a quiet place where I could meet with other women and, you know, just have nobody pulling on us and no advertisers, no kids. I just right. wanted a quiet place where we could talk about, you know, the real stuff. And I've always been obsessed with every faith tradition. And as a serious introvert, I've always been so curious about these monasteries where people kind of escape from the real world to live in small community. But then while they're there, they still work really hard to kind of create a different model for peace. And so that's what I wanted for Momastery. And that's what it's sort of turned out to be. And, you know, as always, I think when people fill each other up, it's just sort of a rule that they overflow, you know, and there has been such an overflow at Momastery. It's, you know, 100,000 of us, we meet, we talk about life in ways that we might not be able to talk about it in the real world. And we are fiercely protective of our rule that we treat each other how we want to be treated. So there are, I mean, I think the great thing about the community at Momastery is that we're all so different. You know, I mean, we say unity is great, but diversity is even better. And we don't feel like we need to change each other. We all have, there's atheists and Christians and Jewish people and, you know, moms and non-moms and every type of person. And we talk about the most controversial things you can imagine. And people do it with love. And it's amazing.
It's a true world community. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I don't know, a few years ago, someone said, you know, we need to adopt a family at Christmas. And so I said, okay, go ahead and I'll help. And, you know, they did a project. And from that small project at Christmas has evolved this a nonprofit called Monkey See, Monkey Do. We call each other the monkeys of the Momastery because monks didn't work because we're just way too irreverent to call ourselves monks. But so we call ourselves Monkey See, Monkey Do because basically we just see needs in our communities and try to do something about them. Kind of like, you know, it's Adam. It's the Adam essay. It's when we feel that clinching of our heart of compassion, we want to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the premise of it is that we can't do great things. Mother Teresa's quote, we can only do small things with great love.
Right.
And so basically it's an organization that does some really great work for families in need based on very small donations from people all over the world. And so there's lots of projects, but one of our favorites is called a Love Flash Mob, which I based it on. I'm obsessed with Love Flash Mob or Flash Mobs. Do you remember those things that were like really cool 10 years ago that I keep trying to bring back? They're like one person would start dancing.
Right, and then, I do. Yeah, yeah, like Grand Oprah Central Station or something.
Yeah. So Oprah has one that has like 8 million views, and Craig says I'm like 7 million of the views because I watch it over and over again. But I just think it's so cool because it's like such a good metaphor for life because, you know, it just takes one crazy fool to start dancing and then everybody else admits that they want to be dancing too. And then we're all the same. So we all know the moves. And so it just takes, you know, a couple people. So that's the premise of this. But the way we do it is I just usually organically the story just comes that our Monkey See, Monkey Do board thinks is in need of a flash mob. So I post a story in the morning on the blog and we open up a PayPal account for donations. And the rule is that nobody is allowed to donate more than $25 because we want people for whom, you know, $6 is a big deal to feel just as a part of this as somebody for whom $25 is no big deal. Because this is really, I mean, the emphasis for us is actually on the givers. Mm-hmm. We just want people all over the country to feel how transformational it is to really feel how powerful you are to help somebody else. Because I do not think that the problem is that there's too much apathy. From what I learn from people every day at Momastery, apathy is not the problem. People love each other. There's so much good.
I completely agree with you. Agree.
Yeah, that's just not the problem. And so so just for example, we did one for service dogs a couple months ago. There were some families with diabetic little ones who had to check their kids' insulin levels, you know, every 2 hours. So these parents weren't sleeping and they needed some service dogs. These service dogs are incredibly expensive. And so we did a Love Flash Mob to raise $100,000 for 4 dogs for these families. And I think it was 6 hours and we raised $125,000. Yeah. And it's
phenomenal.
It's crazy. And you know, the donations are coming in hundreds a minute. The average donation is $17, and it's from 15 different countries. And these are strangers. I mean, these are people who have never met each other, but are so excited about the idea of strangers taking care of each other. It just makes us feel cozier and safer on the earth, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So people obviously are telling other people. So it's not just, I mean, could be just the followers that you have, but the word spreads and everybody jumps in.
I think so, but I'm telling you, this monkey community is crazy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was mostly them, because we just did this holiday hands thing 2 weeks ago. So we kind of have a Craigslist where we set up families in need of some holiday assistance for their kids. And the monkeys come and match themselves with these families. And so I think this year we had 300 families, and we were thinking it would take us a couple days to get them all matched up and cared for. And I think it was 4 hours. Every need was gone. So we had tons of complaints on the Facebook page. And you will see that every single complaint is that there were people who didn't get to give.
Oh, they could, because there were so many people trying to get on at the same time.
Or exactly. The West Coast was, they logged on to get started and it was over. And so they were just, so we had to, you know, make a contingency plan. And of course, now we have another holiday fund going, but we cannot contain the giving. We can't control it. It's out of control. And so, you know, I don't know. We have an all volunteer board, so every penny that's given to Monkey See, Monkey Do goes directly to a family in need. And it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And I'm just so ridiculously honored and amazed to be a part of it.
What made you think to set a limit on the amount of giving they could give?
Because I know that the reason that people don't give is not because they don't want to. It's because there's too many decisions to make. How much? How much is enough? How much is too much? If I give $20, is that really going to make a difference? You know, it's those little questions that keep you from giving. Mm-hmm. And so we knew if we set the bar low, mm-hmm. that people wouldn't have to think about it too hard. Mm-hmm. And the other wonderful, and you know what? Because it does make a big difference. I mean, the whole point of it is we don't want anybody to swoop in and save the day. You know, we don't want somebody to come in and do half of it, because the point is that through small things, we can make a big difference. And so that's what we wanted to prove.
And you did a beautiful job of it. Yeah. You know, usually it's just the other way around. You know, people might say anybody can give, and or they'll say something like any amount is acceptable, you know, letting people know that $10. I mean, sometimes we get I have a donor who gives us $3, or kids who send us I know, it's so absolutely single dollar bills in an envelope mailed in. It's really precious.
But
of course, those of us in philanthropy always sort of keep the door open for those big donations. And, you know, we're always thinking about the, you know, $1 million donor who will pop in and just, you know. It was just, you know, to make it easy was one thing, but to make everybody want to sort of even the playing field so that everybody's giving the same thing and feel part of a community where diversity of economics isn't a factor, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. Because it's not about the money. It's mm-hmm. about everybody feeling empowered to help somebody else. Mm-hmm. And the other beautiful part of it is that since you know that nobody can swoop in and save the day, it's this intense. I mean, I don't even get out of bed on Love Flash Mob Day because I'm so worried and nervous. And I just stare at my computer praying. And so are so many other people, because you have to depend on your community to make this happen. Mm-hmm. You have to. So it's not just, you don't just get the gift of you making a difference. You get the gift of knowing that there are thousands of other people behind their computer screen who care about this as much as you do. Mm-hmm. And that's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about that, when you're in the middle of one of these days and you're thinking about all of the other people who care about strangers as much as you do, it's, to me, it's been life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever imagine that your voice would resonate with this many people?
Oh, goodness, no. Like my dad said, somebody asked at my first book signing, somebody said, you know, are you so proud? And my dad said, we're just glad she's not in jail. No, nobody thought any of this. And you know what? My job still every day is just to show up and to stay sober, which is what my writing's about too. I mean, you know, shame for us recovering people is deadly. So each day, me kind of pulling all my insides and putting them out to the world, it's a practice in sobriety. And so, you know, that's my job, is to stay up, to show up and keep saving myself. And, you know, I think that's maybe the magic of it, is that, you know, we want to help other people and we want to save other people. We want to change other people. And then we find out that if we just show up and save ourselves and change ourselves, that that's what's inspiring to other people.
Yeah, you know, staying sober, that there was the essay that you wrote about moving to near to your parents and in a more rural community, and then one day realizing you were sort of, you know, after several months or some period of time, you know, taking a look at that liquor bottle just longingly, just a little longer than you thought was safe, and making the decision then to move. Again, those are big things. Those are big, courageous things.
Oh, thank you. I think that is sort of the big struggle that I have in my life, is that this constant longing to be connected to other people, but also to run away from them.
Right.
You know, my son the other night, I have two little girls and then a boy, and my girls drive my son insane. And he was saying to me, you know, they stress me out so much, and so I want to be alone. But then when I go to my room and I'm alone, I'm really bored and sad. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you just described my entire life. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to stay away from other people because other people cause me so much stress. Mm-hmm. And I'm an introvert and a loner, kind of. But then I'm not healthy when I stay away from other people. I'm just not healthy. I can't make it so. Mm-hmm. I would love to find a way to be like one of those monks who can just, you know, recluse into a little cell, but that's not what I was made for, I don't think.
I think it's the struggle of most people. Mark Nepo was here last night in the Bay Area speaking at a local, beloved local bookstore called Book Passage. And actually that came up in conversation with the audience. And he said, you know, really the work of our lives is finding that place where we have the rhythm between solitude and community.
We need
both. We really need both. And we need to find out, you know, Mark is an author. So, you know, what he does is block out periods of time where he is writing, where he won't travel and do speaking engagements. And the first time he did it, he blocked out 4 months. And he found out that 2 months was really the longest period of time that he could kind of recluse himself to write a book, because then he started getting weird, he said.
Getting weird. That's right. I get weird. I get weirder. And, you know, it's so funny. I agree. The rhythm is everything. It's not about balance. Forget the word balance. It's rhythm. And I have, you know, I have Be Still tattooed on my wrist, and on the other one is Here I Am. And that's the rhythm. Like, I have to retreat enough to fill up, but then I have to make myself show up too. Mm-hmm. And then I have to retreat again.
Wayne used to say, you know, the whole world operates like that. You know, there's that ebb and flow of tide and our breathing in and breathing out.
Yes.
And he said, if all you do is breathe in, guess what? You're dead.
That's right. And by the way, his book, Sabbath, I read it maybe once a month.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
It's a really fabulous book. Wayne, for those of you who are in our listening audience, Wayne, we're speaking of, is Wayne Muller. He is the founder of Bread for the Journey. And the book she just spoke about is called Sabbath, Restoring the Sacred Rhythm of Rest.
And guess who sent me that book? Al Rubel.
Great. Oh, all comes right back to Al. The whole
it all does.
Around Al. Listen,
it all does.
We're at the end of our show. Do you believe this hour? It just has gone by so fast. I have so enjoyed talking to you, Glennon.
Oh, me too. This has been a wonderful hour. Thank you so much. And thank you for all of your amazing work at Bread for the Journey. I'm going to follow you guys so closely. And I so hope we can work together in the future. I'm just inspired by you.
Great. I feel the same way too. Take good care and be well. And to our listening audience, I'll close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.